I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
The right has really invested in all of this ownership, and the left has not. And we better start figuring this out one way or the other, because the means of distribution of communication, whether it is digital, radio, television, print, it's all still really important. And No one person gets everything in one place. Like, you get it in all different kinds of ways. You just do. And tying that stuff together is going to be really important. But honestly, we got to own more of it. You know, and that's a big piece of this puzzle.
Hi, friends. We find ourselves in a moment of immense uncertainty here in the United States and around the world. We have the potential to work together to save freedom, but we face very strong headwinds. Most of our conversations on this podcast are about how we work together to reclaim freedom in MAGA-captured or battleground states. In other words, we focus pretty strongly on state and local politics and how important they are for building power for democracy across the whole country. So we know that we have to focus on our state and local involvement, which moves more slowly but can have a greater impact on our lives. Many of us in MAGA-captured states are at the beginning of organizing for a decade or more of power building. But this moment requires us to hold multiple things in our head at the same time. We need to keep focusing locally on local organizations, local politics, and local media, especially in places where MAGA has a stranglehold. But we also can't lose sight of the national picture. The 2024 presidential election is about whether we continue to have a constitutional democracy. We've seen that Donald Trump has promised to be a dictator if he wins. We also see that other Republicans have promised to pardon him if they win. And we see that the right-wing political class has promised us with Project 2025 that if Republicans gain the presidency, they will purge the civil service, take away marriage equality, ban abortion nationally, and continue to take away trans rights. Our media sits at the fulcrum of these major forces at play in 2024. Our major national media is failing to protect democracy and focus on what is at stake in the next election. A major example of this is that Texas is ignoring a Supreme Court order and claiming the right to control national security, which is actually the federal government's purview. This standoff, in which Greg Abbott is defying the federal government and 25 MAGA governors have gone on record supporting him, is the kind of conflict that can precipitate a civil war. Yet the media has said very little about it, and when they do, they treat it as a dispute between two sides who have a minor difference of opinion. What they should be doing is talking about how Texas is trying to provoke a standoff or start a war, and how Republicans in the House are refusing to negotiate a border deal so they can preserve it as an issue for Trump to run on against Biden. And that's where my conversation with Stephanie Shriat comes in. Stephanie is the former director of Emily's List and is currently engaged in finding ways that Democrats can control a media distribution network to actually break through with our shared values of community and freedom. We talk a lot here about the right messaging. Stephanie believes that we have good messaging, but what we don't have is a great means of delivery. There are a lot of unrelated initiatives going on. We have communication hubs in some states, but not all. The right wing owns a lot of the public media, and Stephanie Shriak is trying to convince wealthy progressives to buy more media at every level. Our friend Simon Rosenberg sees that we have a massive group of activists who communicate online, which is why he does his Zoom presentations and talks to every outlet he can. Anant Shankar Osorio and the Research Collaborative hold briefings on the state of democracy and on messaging that works. We have a ton of digital organizers spread all across our social media, and we've got an army who will be working on relational organizing full-time. Stephanie Shriak is trying to bring together a lot of these different streams in which our candidates, activists, and even the president have a more reliable method of reaching the voters than the national or local media. She's working with groups to strengthen local media and other groups to create a larger platform. What we as activists can do is pay attention to the media and information distribution and look for ways that we can contribute, either locally or as a digital army that must reach beyond our social media silos. We can support podcasts like this one so that our message gets out as much in as many formats and as many styles as possible. So now, where I usually give you a pitch on how to support us directly, I'm going to ask all of you to think about ways in which you might want to sponsor the show and place ads. Do you have constituents you want to reach? Do you have an organizing platform that activists should know about? Do you want to hear from a series of state-level candidates? You can help fund one, some, or all of these things to keep spreading the word to members of our podcast community who are activists, voters, organizers, candidates, and, above all, people who care deeply about the country and our future, especially in areas that can use the most help. So please think about what you'd like to hear on Freedom Over Fascism and be in touch to sponsor a series or a conversation or a panel. Thank you. Now for my conversation with Stephanie Shriok. I absolutely loved talking with her. I'm a true believer in the need to control more means of information distribution, and I think you'll really enjoy our conversation. Stephanie Shriok, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, so much for having me today. I'm thrilled to be here. And thank you for all you're doing in this shared battle to prevent fascism from taking over our country.
It is a battle and it is shared. And I know you're involved in some really great stuff. You know, on this podcast, we talk about building power with candidates, fighting for all the different offices from local to state. We're focused a lot on state and localities here, but I'm also focused on media and independent media and how the mainstream media is completely spitting the bit and really fouling up. And there's a lot of people who talk about it. And I think a lot about how they really talk about the odds rather than the stakes. Do you do anything with any, you know, media that we can actually talk about now?
Yeah, let's definitely talk. I'm so glad that you are focusing on that. And can we get so many more people to focus on this? This is a critical piece of what we need to do. Those who control the airwaves control the culture, and mm-hmm. the culture controls everything else, right? And we've seen this over and over country. This is why dictators, when they come into power, people like Oban and others, take over the airwaves immediately and take them from private hands and put them into their own public hands, so to speak, for dangerous purposes. And we do not address this in nearly as strong a way as we need to. So I want to commend you for bringing this up and centralizing this. As you know, some folks will know, I served as the president of Emily's List for 11 years, electing Democratic women all across the country. Prior to that, I'd worked in Democratic politics in lots of different ways, all on the election side, all about getting those candidates elected. And every election cycle, it's gotten, and I say this, I've been doing this a while now, and a few decades of watching this, it's gotten harder and harder and harder. And what the election side of the Democratic Party does pretty frickin' well. Because what we have to do is spend so much money basically deprogramming enough people to vote for us who have been listening to for 24/7, 365 days a year, a lot of propaganda or misinformation coming from what we used to be like the right-wing media environment, and in fact has become, I would argue, the driving factor of all mainstream media. Because all they do is react to what's being said on Fox News or what is being driven by, you think about Drudge in the old way, but there's so many of those, but they're all tied together. So when I left Emily's List, it was one of the things I wanted to get engaged with somehow was really encouraging folks who had the means, because this is not an inexpensive endeavor, to start purchasing any kind of anything. I was like, buy a radio station, buy one, just buy one somewhere. Let's get started. And slowly but surely that is happening. And it was already happening to a certain extent. But the truth is, it's about then connecting them. And so there's some really great individual stories I can tell about what's happened in the last couple of years. But the truth is if we don't get really serious really quickly, very quickly, win or lose in November, we are going to have a much more significant way to distribute information across this country. And we do not have that right now.
No, I mean, not only are the airwaves all either reacting to Fox News or trying to create symmetry where there isn't any, but the social media landscape is completely fractured as well.
Yes.
Like, our public spaces aren't holding up right now.
It's so true. It's so true. Well, and I think we forget about this. We've got all these great on the left, there's these big online communities, whether it be in the conservation sector or the reproductive rights sector, but they're kind of issue siloed off. And mm-hmm. they're not tied together in any meaningful way. And we're not a top down kind of, that's not how we roll as Democrats. That's why we like, I like us being scrappy, and we want to bring lots of voices in, and we should do that. But we've got to start tying all this together with the shared values, that it's not just Democrats or progressives, but the shared values of this country that hold us together. And one of those major ones is, in fact, community. Community is a value. It's not just a thing. It's not just what something you're part of, but it's a value. And if you don't have a way to talk to each other beyond running into each other in a grocery store, but hearing what's going on in the drive to work on the radio about your community, or turning on your local news and it's actually your local news and not some editorialized propaganda that came from Sinclair on high into your local news,
right?
Or you're putting on the national news and you're bombarded with something else, or God forbid you're on cable news and then you're just getting bombarded. We have to really think about localizing our news. I think that's part of the structure, and some of the work I've been doing is thinking through how we protect our weekly newspapers. Our daily newspapers across the country have really already taken a huge hit.
Right.
My father lives just outside of Kansas City, Kansas now. And every time I go home, I pull out the Kansas City Star and I just want to cry. I mean, Kansas City is a major city in the country and it looks like a newsletter. And it hurts my soul. It is printed in Des Moines. By Lee, right? And they ship it down every day. So it's like the Des Moines Register and the Kansas City Star basically coming from the same place. They do have some local coverage, but the truth is it's not nearly what it was when they moved there, 25 years ago. And you can see it dividing. It's starting to just divide folks up because they don't know what's tying them together in the communities. And when there's no localized news, And no authentic local voices talking about what's going on in your city council, what's going on in your schools, what's the truth of what the crime situation is in your community, and not what Fox News tells you the quote unquote truth of crime is, then you only get the nationalized news. And the nationalized news is not news, it is entertainment to drive anger and frustration. And so we have to start doing one of two things, I think, is like figuring out resources to protect or secure those local, whatever local means we have, whether it is digital, weekly newspapers, radio stations. Yes, friends, people do listen to the radio, particularly in the middle of the country or on work sites. And we can do that through investment, or we can do that through a lot of really great C3 activities like the National Trust for Local News. Great, great organization. Could use literally like tens of millions, if not, I would argue, hundreds of millions of more dollars to do what they need to do to help protect these local news outlets, because that's all they've got in these communities. That's it.
Well, I mean, even in bigger communities, you're sitting in San Francisco right now where I spent my early career. And even then, the San Francisco Chronicle was not what it needed to be for one of the biggest cities in the country or the most prominent cities. And, you know, I look at it every time I go back to see my dad, and it's just a shell of what it ought to be.
Oh, no, Steph, I'm going to buy one this morning. I always buy a newspaper. Am I going to cry? I haven't seen it in a while. I'm going to cry, aren't I? It's heartbreaking. And here's the other thing. And Stephanie, you know this better than anybody. Just sit back and like, how else do you think we're going to communicate with people? You know, we've got a lot of folks who fund a lot of political activities. And I'm grateful to those folks who do fund those political activities so we can win elections, but then hesitate to put resources into what would be long-term infrastructure like journalism that actually protects democracy. That is it. So I just want folks to think about, okay, I'm going to fund, you know, my former boss up for re-election in Montana, Senator John Tester, who is phenomenal and people really love him. But the difference between when I managed his race in 2006, which we were already struggling with media decreasing and media deserts and news deserts in Montana in 2006, you go back now and the consolidation of radio stations, the decrease news in the local newspapers, the ownership of news TV stations by outside sources has all just continued to decrease the ability for a U.S. senator to communicate with the citizens he represents. Like, that is just the simple, forget about the election part. That is the job, right? Is to like communicate what's going on. And he has a terrible time getting that through across the state. And so in those environments, like, we're going to spend tens of, probably, I bet there's $100 million spent in Montana. Population 1.1 million, a million, you know, $100 million spent in this election. Well, why don't we pull out, I don't know, maybe $20 million and actually invest in some long-term, like, newspapers, radio stations, and a digital platform underneath all of that, that folks can access to, except in Eastern Montana, because we still have broadband problems out there. But we, like, that would make a huge difference in an investment for ensuring that citizens get information. Like, we have got to think about this as part of the entire puzzle of saving democracy.
That is so true. And I think a lot about, one, the differential between the big money in the Republican sphere and where they're putting their dollars in both candidates and this whole, you know, reshaping of America. And we only have on our side a few super wealthy people who are spending any significant amount of money. And then it's kind of fractionalized, you know, between candidates and power building organizations, which need to happen because we can't just put money into candidates and races, because we need, you know, in states like Montana, I did work in Indiana, all those kinds of red states, it takes a decade to build power back. The media, which we've essentially seeded the ground on. What do you think would motivate people to think in the longer term and expand that thinking to media and how to communicate as opposed to just messaging or just candidates or just organizing?
It is such a good question. It's like you've gone into the grinding inside my brain, Stephanie, of every day. Like, how do we make this case that you can even use? You can use your investment, a different pot of money, you know. So if I were a billionaire, I've got my political pot of money, I've got my 501c3 nonprofit side of money, and I've got my big, huge investments, right, to make sure I just keep maintaining as a billionaire. right. Retaining, so you, can, you know, and some of them are great. They spent huge, and I would say so grateful to the amount of money, particularly on the C3 side, that goes into so many really, really important things. I often say to folks, I was like, I don't care ultimately how much money you can move into C3 land to provide food for the poor, which desperately need, and housing for the poor, or to save the arts, which is so important for our culture, or to provide health care and backup hospitals, for God's sakes, or backup universities that we desperately need. All these things. I don't care how much money you have. If we have a government who's going to dismantle everything that is that safety net or that opportunity for those folks, like, you have enough to counter that. The government has more money than you. And if you get the wrong, if you get a dictator in that government, which we could be, like, it's very clear, Donald Trump's like, if I win, I'm going to be a dictator for a day. Well, his day is going to be 4 years.
Come or on. 16.
Or God, like, right, forever, the rest of our lives. Thank you. Like, we'll have like a Putin-esque president. It'll be a nightmare. Like, it won't matter. It won't matter unless you provide a way to communicate. And I think that it's the communication piece that is so, so important, because if we do not change hearts and minds of Americans and find the shared values that do in fact tie us together, and I believe that deeply, we do share values together with those who are in the MAGA movement, those who are in the right-wing so-called Christian movement. But there are shared American values that hold us together. And freedom, as you use, is one of those values. Freedom is incredibly important. And if we don't talk about that in a localized way, none of the other stuff's going to matter. Because we do ultimately, at the end of the day, we have to win elections. And we've got to do the power building of organizing to do that. But you still have to talk to those folks. If you have an organizing group in, I'll just say in Montana, I'll just, because I've been doing a ton of work there recently, we've got some great groups. We've got Big Sky 55 Plus. We've got Montana Rural Voters. Oh my gosh, we've got Western Native Voice, Montana Conservation, Forward Montana. Great, great groups who are all underfunded, but on the doors, in the communities, in the diners. I don't know if we ever really have diners in Montana, in the like little restaurants, in the Applebee's. Let's just talk about what we got and talking to folks. But the problem is you have that conversation, and then those people go home and they turn on their TV.
Right.
And they hear something totally different. And then you got to talk to them again. We have to have communication distribution systems. This isn't a messaging problem. This is a distribution problem. And we can do this. We can do this through C3. We can do a lot of C3 activity, and some of that's going on. And I'm very glad to see some of that going on. But if you got that kind of money, make some investments. You're not going to make a bunch of, this is not a money-making endeavor anymore on media. Like, this is, that ship has sailed. The Republicans caught it early on, and they're going to keep making money because they have a lot of eyeballs. I think ultimately we can actually probably produce profit on this, but that's not what this is about. This is part of a larger strategy. And I really, really hope that we understand you can't talk to every American in person. We're just like, talk to them every day. Like, how do you talk to people every day? And it's not by knocking on doors.
No. And, I've been saying, for Indiana, you've got to knock on every door in Indiana because they're not hearing anything. And that is true. But yes, they go back and they turn on, even if it's CNN or MSNBC, right?
Yeah, correct. Because they're all reacting, Stephanie, they're all reacting to the right-wing propaganda that's going on. And they end up in this similar debate that's actually not helping. It's dividing us up. It's dividing us up. And we do better as a country and as a party and as a progressive movement when folks are thinking about bringing people together. They do better on the other side by separating us.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to stop. And that's got to be with means of communication distribution.
And it's really interesting. And I'm chatting a lot about this, but you can tell I'm very passionate about it. It's because I have watched my grandmother's state of Iowa, and you're talking about Indiana, and I would say same thing in Indiana. Senator Tom Harkin, God bless him, was one of the best senators we've had in such a very long time. He was a progressive. He moved the American Disabilities Act. He did so many great things. That man could not get elected in Iowa right now. That state has slipped away so far from us. And it is because every time I went there to see my grandma Fairbanks, my mom grew up in Iowa, the radio stations, one by one, just collapsed unless they were Christian. And when I say Christian, I mean, this is like right-wing political Christian. This isn't like going into my Episcopal church on Sunday morning. This is a different ballgame. Or they were Christian country. I love country, but I was like, whoa, wait a second. Where's my just plain country? But all day long, even if it was a music station, what was around it was their news, not news, their version of the news. And then those newspapers shrunk. And then the TV stations were bought up by Sinclair, and things got divided up, and your community started coming apart. And all of a sudden, we've got an entire Republican state that it's not even a battleground state for the presidential anymore.
Right.
Obama won that state. This isn't like it happened in the last 40 years. This happened in the last 10.
Exactly.
And when we at Emily's List were fighting so, so hard with the help of Senate Majority PAC and so many good folks who jumped in with Teresa Greenfield running for Senate in 2020, and the polling looked like it was going to go our direction, except, you know, the power, unfortunately, of Trump's rhetoric drives out a very large, particularly in those states, large, angry white vote that doesn't always come out. And they only live in that media universe. And it just dropped us. Everybody's like, what happened with the polling? I'm like, well, Trump has this ability to bring out through all of these media networks, including digital platforms that they do have tied together, which we don't. We have to do that.
Right.
And they showed up. Now, how do we do? We got to build that too.
We have to build that too. And I don't really think there are undecided voters anymore. There are people who decide to vote or not vote, right? Because they know what they're going to get with Trump. But do they think that they're going to get anything better with anybody else?
Yeah, that's an interesting, I'm really torn on that. You would think that's the case. But I do think that we're going to have to, it's hard for us because we live it every day, but I think we're going to have to remind people.
Oh, sure.
Like a lot.
Absolutely.
About what he will do, what he has done, particularly as it relates to abortion access. Which is going to be a massive driving factor, because that is a stripping away of freedom. It is the clearest example of the government absolutely stripping away a freedom that we had and now is gone.
Right.
And left to states.
And it's life and death. It's not like, it's completely life and death.
Entirely life and death. And there's going to be all too many stories, and it's going to be heart-wrenching. And it's just getting worse. It's just every day there's another bad story because, well, you know, people get pregnant. Like, this is what happens. It's funny how that works with people, you know? It's just like, that's kind of how the world works. And then, you know, you've got these situations where things go wrong, or folks need to make decisions to protect the rest of their family, and there's none there. So these need to be laid out clearly about how we got here. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is what's so interesting, is that when you look at all the polling, the country's pro-choice, the country's with us on abortion access, but yet they want, like, you can get minority policies through. And I mean, I use the word minority as in percentage of the population that supports them through, when you have, in essence, a near authoritarian regime running that and has set up and rigged, as they always like to use, but has rigged the judicial system, has rigged the communication system, and has rigged all these other places to get to, has rigged the redistricting, has set it up so they can hold on to power, even though everything they do does not match it.
Right.
And so as we look at these states, you know, I'm working with this awesome organization called Progress Now, and they have built out in 25 states, particularly with focuses on our battleground states, over 15 years, these communication operations that do start tying people together, organizations that can share information. And now they've got this amazing program called the Megaphone Program, which you should check out. It's really focused on the battleground states, but it is the beginning of what we should have built 20 years ago. And I remember thinking, like, why don't we build out at least this organic digital system where we provide content that folks can use about our shared values? Or they can do it too. Like, let folks do their own thing and design it and move it around on social media, their networks. And that's exactly what the Megaphone program is designed to do. And you're going to, I believe, see the beginnings. These are sort of, we're planting the seeds now, and it's going to be finding hundreds of volunteers in these battleground states who are committed to moving on social media to build out what I would call a grassroots broadcasting system.
Right.
Because we don't have one.
We don't, but we have lots of little attempts. Like,
right.
In 2020, I was part of the, what we called the Biden Digital Network, all volunteer, all platform, right? I was the Facebook director of that. And I think that we made a difference.
You did. Where'd it go after? What happened after the campaign?
It dissolved.
Exactly.
And then I created an organization that I wanted to do the same thing, but I wasn't big enough to pull it together. And I know that lots of other groups are trying to do this.
Yes.
But we're not woven together.
Yes. So this is exact. So you can help me. We'll do this together. That is the reason we talked about it for a long time. I say we, I mean, the folks who are in the labor movement and elected officials, and just like, how do we need to base this that digital network that Biden had, Hillary Clinton had it, Obama had it. It's gotten bigger and different because the platforms have evolved over those years. But we have to base it in a permanent infrastructure place, not on a campaign. Democrats love to build stuff around the campaign. We love candidates. And I love that about us. We love people. We love our candidates. And we should. But this needs to be permanent. So it needs to live in an entity that is always there. And so building it out, you know, at these communication hubs in these states that have been there in Michigan for over a decade, that have been in Pennsylvania already for over a decade. They're not going to go away in 2025 or 6 or 7. They are there. And so now they're going to have this organic digital amplification system in place with volunteers who still have things to do after the 2024 election, because we'll roll right into legislative session. And we'll need information going then. And then we'll roll into special elections. Then we'll roll into it. There's always something going on.
Right.
And we got to connect all of these folks together, like all of these groups. And then sooner or later, you're going to see the shared values coming out. We don't have to dictate them.
No,
but
the values are
up.
Actually shared. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things that I am totally committed to and amazed that it hasn't happened, but maybe that's because we're Democrats, is that we silo so much. We all have our patch of land.
Yeah.
And connecting in a more permanent way would help so much, but we don't do it.
Yeah. And there is more activity going on at the state level than there has been in a long time. And this gives me the most hope. Because we do connect together when there's the big presidential campaign, right? We're pretty good at like getting everybody in order together to get through a presidential campaign or through a big Senate campaign. I mean, so we still win the big ones, right? But we need to have a place to have that permanent infrastructure. And what is being built in places like Pennsylvania where you've got, I think it's Keystone Communications. In Montana, it's Middle Fork Strategies, Middle Fork being a river, to start as the communication hubs that line up with America Votes votes tables that have all these organizations talking to each other. And those those are there permanently. Like they don't go away after the election. And they can work with all these organizations. And so even League of Conservation Voters or Planned Parenthood or Emily's List can like step into these or be part of them. Like in back to Montana, which is what I know the best, is that we've got Middle Fork Strategies, which is a communications operation that's doing some really, really great work. And we'll be working in conjunction with Montana Conservation Voters. We'll be working with Montana Planned Parenthood. We'll also be working with Forward Montana, which does the campus work, and Mount PIRG, Montana PIRGs, also doing campus work. And you start putting these pieces together and they meet. They actually have a place to go that connect. They still have to do their own thing. That's important. Right. But they can come together and they can ask each other for help when things really start blowing up. That's the other thing.
So how do we take Montana and Pennsylvania and Indiana and Oklahoma, and how do we knit that
the national
together?
Piece?
Because it's also, it's not just getting the word out on social media. It's one piece removed. You know, you learn what you have to say on social media, but then you have to go say it in real life and repeat it in real life. So that gets back to your central question. Or you need people who break through, and they're not very often, right? The Zoe Zephyrs.
Yeah.
Jasmine Crockett's been kicking ass, right?
That's right. Or the women who've like already kind of risen up into the middle and have found ways and now are going to take it to the next step, right?
Right.
I think of the, you know, Lauren Underwood in Illinois, who's in Congress now, but like she's not stopping in the House. You know, Abigail Spanberger's already decided to run for governor in Virginia. And I think that's going to be phenomenal. Like these, you know, Mikey Sherrill's looking at, you know, possibly run for higher office. You've got all these great, you know, I'm talking about all the women, of course, because, you know, I'm biased. But,
well, you know,
11
also
years of Emily's List, that's what I do.
Well, but there's something there because, you know, when I talked to Gloria Johnson last year, and she was one of the Tennessee three, and that was really important. But she's running for first senator against Marshall Blackburn.
Oh, yes, Senate. That's right.
And having the people who can break through be your only option.
Yeah, that's too much to ask. It's too much to ask of those folks. So we're back to that's what's so hard. And so we are like, we can build this so there's at least some digital capacity. Some of that will pop up, at least even in the States, that's worth something because folks do listen to their local news. They trust the local news more than they trust anything else. So there's that piece of things that's concerning. If folks like Sinclair or Salem own all of the local news, then we're going to have a problem. And don't think they're not trying. I mean, as you said, we saw the Baltimore Sun just got sold to the CEO or the founder, I guess, of Sinclair. Like, that's not good. That's not good for America. That's an important paper. They know this too. Like, they got it. They're buying up stuff rapidly. So how do we, you know, engage our folks? And it's a constant conversation. I think there recently, and forgive me, I can't remember who wrote the piece, but in the New Republic, just this weekend was a story specifically about this, that the right has really invested in all of this ownership and the left has not. And we better start figuring this out one way or the other, because the means of distribution of communication, whether it is digital, radio, television, print, it's all still really important. And no one person gets everything in one place. Like, you get it in all different kinds of ways. You just do. And tying that stuff together is going to be really important. But honestly, we got to own more of it. You know, and that's a big piece of this puzzle. Like, we've done a great job. You know, if folks haven't taken a look at, you know, at audience building, like Push Black and Pulso, but both came out of Accelerate Change. A phenomenal incubator, really, for building from scratch, because you can build from scratch. Now, those are digital too, but they can get radio hits, you know, and Black radio is really, really, really important. you know, and right. Hispanic radio and Spanish mm-hmm. language radio is really, really important. I mean, kudos to the Latino Media Network for being brave and buying up those initial round of radio stations. Like, we need to support those folks. And those of us who can need to find ways to buy advertising on these places that we do, in fact, own and support, whether it's the podcast system, the radio system, the little things we have, we should need to continue supporting them. And it's not, I know sometimes we just want like the silver bullet, and this is not the case. This is a long-term continued support. And I'm telling you, if we don't do it, it is going to be mighty hard to organize our way out of it. Because if they block the ability to communicate through...
Right, that's the ballgame.
Like, we need to knock on all the doors, Stephanie, you're right. But those folks also need to hear other places mm-hmm. the same thing we said on those doors.
Right. Because by definition, a message isn't heard if it isn't repeated.
That's right.
And it needs to be repeated. And it's not a difficult message. It's something we all believe in.
Correct. Right? Everybody's like, do we need a better message? I was like, well, no, I don't. Why? Nobody can hear it.
Right.
It's like, who's going to hear our fancy pants message if we just don't have any means to communicate it out?
Right.
Or we get like one hit, or we like, God loves our president who like goes in and announces an amazing infrastructure operation in whatever, you know, X name a state. It's happening everywhere, by the way, folks. We are literally building stuff all over the country. It is jobs, it is economy, it is going to help everybody. And he'll do like one press conference and it's awesome. And they'll get one hit, like one story. And then the next 3 weeks, all those papers and all those radio stations, all those TV networks are just going to bash him over something else.
Right. Like Trump is indicted again. Here's why that's bad for Biden.
Yes. And it was like, okay, we have to get out of this mindset. Yeah. And it's so we have a challenge in front of us is the truth. But I want to say there are good folks stepping up. We need more. We need brave folks like you who are willing to put their time in to do podcasts. We need to communicate each other's podcasts. Like, that's another whole piece of this puzzle. There's so much good content coming out from our side, but they're not getting connected. So how do we better connect those pieces and cross it? And I don't know, for those who, you know, if you think about the one radio network that actually does cover everything and is arguably middle, is National Public Radio. And they have, I don't listen to the radio as much as I listen to their various podcasts. And what I have noticed in the last year, and it's really, really smart, is they cross promote their podcasts all the time now. That didn't used to happen.
Right.
And they figured it out. They're like, we're going to like rise or sink together. They are cross promoting. And so we got to build some sort of like progressive co-op of all of this to be like, okay, now we got to cross promote each other's content.
Yeah. There are small groups.
Mm-hmm.
There are small groups. And some of them, I asked to be part of one, the democracy group. And they say, well, you know, some of our podcasts have similar content to yours. So we can't help you.
Yeah, that's the wrong answer.
I know.
Repetition. And do you have different ears? Mm-hmm. Like, are different people listening? The answer is yes.
Yes.
So then you bring them together and hear it in different ways. Because some people, it's also, you got to hear it in a way that you can hear it. It's not just one thing.
Right. Right. Yep. You know, there are some podcasts where you hear people chatting, and that's great for some people. Drives some people nuts. You know,
yes,
there's some people like this format where I talk to people, but somebody else wants just somebody talking to them or more panels or.
Correct. Yes. And that's okay. But let's give it to them all and tie it to all together. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll just, you know, I know because we'll have to wrap up really soon. It was just, I love talking to you. We can do this again. I want to just sort of center for a moment the brave folks who put their names on the ballot here. And kind of this is, I think, really incredibly important. These candidates of ours who are willing to run, they are putting their whole selves and their whole families into a crazy situation where there is just constant attacks all over the place around them. And they want to just share what they know and what they're hearing, and they want to hear from their constituents if they're elected and voters if they're running. Where are they going to go to best govern if there's nowhere to share information? They are stressing out about this. They are watching it in real time. They are watching these newspapers disappear. They are watching their inability to communicate, whether they are a state legislator or they are a U.S. senator or, frankly, president of the United States. That used to have this, like, you have the bullhorn, you're the president of the United States. Well, only if everybody covers you, which doesn't happen very often anymore.
Or if, you know, you win 65% of the vote in an election, you're not even on the ballot, and they say nobody wants Biden.
Right.
And it's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh. I know. That's like, right. Honestly, I was surprised that he got that message. That was like the opposite.
He wasn't on the ballot.
But wow, that many people went in and wrote his name in. I am so impressed. Good organization, by the way. Thumbs up for all the people who are down on the organization. That took organization.
Yes, it did.
So
yes,
thumbs up.
So to wrap up, I think you are onto the most important piece of this. I mean, everything's the most important piece, right? But we do have to get it out there. We have to have a channel. And I am so glad that you're working on this, because it's so necessary. And yeah. I'm so glad you came to talk to us, because I loved talking to you as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad. We'll do it again, and we'll have better updates, and we'll just keep talking, because I think this is so important. And I've managed a lot of elections. I've fundraised. I've done big organization. I've done it all at this point in my career on the electoral side. If we don't fix this, we will not have enough money to counter what the American people are hearing every day. We will run out. It's why people ask me why the map, like, why are we in Florida? We are literally have to focus our money, because it costs so much more to get to break through on ads.
Right.
And we have to
do it. And we are in Florida, though.
We are.
I talked to Fentress Driscoll, the minority leader. She's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, there's good stuff there. Yeah, we are
everywhere.
That's true. But like,
we're not breaking through everywhere.
Like, why is Florida not a presidential battleground state? Well, partially because we just are running out of resources to do what we need to do in the places that we can. That's the problem. So we need to fix the ability to communicate 365 days a year. That's what we need to do. We do that, this all is going to get easier. And we're going to start bringing people back together.
With that, thank you, Stephanie.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.